Oh. So did anybody have a chance to look into these Mikoros on Tanai Besdin to pick up where we left off? Evan, you had a chance to look at it? Yeah, so what do you think? So we left off, just to remind everyone, left off this a little machlokas between Yoni and me about whether Tanai Besdin has the connotation of being statutory. It's like a legislative enactment passed by Besdin, or whether it's more of like an implied term in an agreement, something like an implied warrant of, you know, peaceful enjoyment or habitability. Yoni thought it was more of this implied term idea, which is a more restrictive interpretation of Tanai Besdin. I thought that Tanai Besdin implies, I think as Cole said, like a legislative action. It's like just a Takanas Besdin. The reason why we're interested in this is because we're trying to figure out the mechanism of Darshina Lashon Hedyot. You recall the Ramban in his last answer, in his own answer, had this very interesting formulation. I'll just remind you, B'nir Mikan, Hadar Minan Darish Lashon Hedyot, Ahi Kamar, Shaya Osem Minag Hedyotos Ikar, Vidan Al Piyam, Ki Ilu Nohagu Al Picha Chamim, V'yaf Al Pisha Me'atzman Horgulu Lichtov Kein, Shalo Al Picha Chamim, Haya Osem Minag Kitnai Besdin. So the Ramban was arguing that these practices of the common folk, these commercial practices that people just took up, they have the normative power of Takanos Chachamim, even though they weren't enacted by the Chachamim. Hilchasa Ninu Ukitnai Besdin, this idea that they are Kitnai Besdin, Ki'ilu Nagu Al Pi Chachamim, is a recurring theme in the Ramban's interpretation of Darshina Lashon Hedyot. The Ran picks up on some of these themes. We'll see at the end of the Chabura today that the Rashba just runs with this idea throughout. And it's really the doctrine built up by the Ramban. And what I was trying to argue, or what I was setting the foundation for arguing, is that this is not just a rough analogy to say that the legal output of Darshina Lashon Hedyot is that it binds people regardless of whether they agreed to it, but more that the mechanism for Darshina and Lashon Hedyot is derived, it flows from this idea of Tanai Besdin. There's some common power to both of these things. And we'll talk more about what the common power is and whether one is grounded in the other. That's what we'll get into more deeply next week. But I think that what's crucial about the Ramban is that in setting up the mechanism for Darshina Lashon Hedyot, he relates it to Tanai Besdin and seems to think that, at least in my reading, I know Yoni thought the Chafa Dimyon was more Dimyon, more on the Dimyon side of things, but that this is, there's something about that's the normative practices of the people that could be binding on others. I want to motivate that idea a little bit. Everyone's watching the confirmation hearings. As Lindsey Graham said, the hearings to confirm Judge Barrett, right? There's this all this talk about the meaning of the law. The Republicans are very excited about original public meaning and originalism. There is this view out there that sometimes the right, like, you don't need the legislation, or you don't need, it's not so much like the original intent or the original public meaning that defines the Constitution, but sometimes there are these moments where there's just this clear public understanding amongst the people as to what the constitutional principles are, that you don't need a formal amendment to change it.
This is the worst idea ever to come out of a professor at Yale Law School, I think, in the history of Yale Law School.
Is this like an Akhil Amar thing, or?
No, it's Bruce Ackerman.
Oh, this is Ackerman's thing? Oh, yeah, constitutional moments, right? Or
this is an idea that gets you tenure at Yale Law School, and hi, I yell it. That was I yell it. No.
No, it's Adi screaming.
Oh, hi, Adi. This is an idea that would get you tenure at Yale Law School, and that you'd fail out of like freshman political theory for proposing. It's an appalling.
The idea is that you know, kind of the, if in the civil rights movement, if there's a certain recognition that equality of races is a fundamental value or principle of our society, you don't need to change the, you don't need to amend the Constitution to make it legal. But, you know, it's like the people have spoken through, you know, their actions or some general public understanding that has normative legal force. I say that only as an analogy for something I want to get at next week, but that should motivate the idea, or maybe it doesn't motivate it for Cole, that there could be this commonality or this disjunctive way of generating the legal norms, right? Either through the legislature of Tanai Besdin or through the Mashinagu Hegiotos Alpiatsman could generate something like Tanai Besdin. So I'm not leaning on the Bruce Ackerman idea. Just want to soften you up to that possibility. I'm going to make a slightly different suggestion, actually, but just want to move in that direction. So let's talk about what Tanai Besdin. Oh, sorry, Evan, you had a comment that you were saying. No, go back. All right.
No.
I insist.
I didn't have a comment.
You had a thought, maybe? Okay. Fine. So the question is, what is Tanai Besdin? So I put on a bunch of examples here. Did anybody get a chance to skim the range of examples where Tanai Besdin appears? Okay, so who wants to tell us about just the sense that you get from the various manifestations of Tanai Besdin across these different sugyas?
It's honestly pretty varied. I mean, some of them are literal clauses that we're plopping into the ksuba. I mean, even in the, just take the first example there, you have the latter two cases are clauses of achrayis nechasim, which we put into the ksuba, and a clause of pidyon shvuyim, which we put into the ksuba. And the first one is, if there's no contract whatsoever, there's no ksuba, there's a time based on that he's chayiv. So like, that's clearly not, I don't know, that would be very difficult to presume that like the more limited that we're just putting in a clause. There's no, I don't know, unless you want to say like, oh, kola nose, al das kain, and nose, put into the nesuin. I don't know, it's like,
you'd have to read the marriage as the contract or on that. Yeah. So yeah, I think the, you know, this is an interesting question. The first thing seems very broad that, you know, the ksiva itself is a Tanai Besdin. I'm inclined to think that the marriage is not a contract in you know, this usual sense. It's just a statute, right? The Besdin says, the Allah, the Rabbanan say that automatically there's a ksiva regardless of whether you write it in. And it's a ksiva of Masayim, regardless of whether you write it in. The other cases certainly, I mean, Zachariah, tell us your impression of the other cases. So we have Mishnah and Demai. Tell us about that case.
Yeah, so let's go through these.
Zion, okay. Gimel, and Demai.
Yeah, so
you don't have to give us the gory details. You need to just tell us the outcome.
Yeah. So talking about like a worker who's getting fed by the Baal Bayis and he's separating Shumas Meiser, and pretty much the end of the day is that there's a Tanai Besdin that the cost of the separating that extra Shumas Meiser, the Baal Bayis has to take on, and he pretty much the extra he has to give the worker an extra 1% of food in order to compensate for that.
That's right.
So that's like a pretty narrow example. Like there already is an agreement. Like we already saw like a Kolkum and Medina buy food. So there's just kind of like another detail in that. It's fine.
Yeah, it's a little, yeah, I'm on the fence about this one also. It's hard to know what exactly the principle is, right? So the worker is allowed to eat. If he's mafresh, so which of the matnos kahuna and matnos aniyim come from the Baal Bayis' portion and which come from his portion, right? So... you know, you'll say, oh, it's a Tanai Besdin, and so Seth is a little clearer about this. It's not clear if that's an implied term, right? They're just saying this is an implied term of a poel relationship, but Chum are just saying this is the rule, right? This is the rule that when a poel is eating, he could take this amount from the Baal Bayis. The Mishnah in Shalim is a very different context in Zayin Vav. What's going on in Shkalim, here you have questions about if someone dies. I mean, different permutations. Take the Cohen Guttle example. The Cohen Guttle dies. Who pays for his mincha, right? And we say, well, Tanai Bezdin al Kohen Gadol Shemei Shetehe Menchaso Kreva Mishel Tzibor. That just sounds like it's a rule. I don't think it makes sense to talk about an agreement in this case. Does that sound right, Zakaria?
Do we think we read the ratio of the Mishnah as expanding to the whole thing? Because then it's clear that this is some sort of legislative or prescriptive, like this is something that was hutkan, or I think that's how you say it, that like this is a active decision by Chazal or Beistin or whatever you want to call it, but it's unclear if that's talking about the next few, only those next two examples of the Nachri and the Ger, and then the Kohen Gadol is like a different clause. But if you read it together, then it's clear this is prescriptive, I think.
Right, but just to clarify the issue here, I don't think it's so much about prescriptive or not prescriptive. I think they're all going to be, everyone thinks they're prescriptive. The question is, what's the scope of it? Is this just a formal enactment? Like, it's just like a statute that this is a law that we're passing? Or is it, well, when you have certain narrow agreements, you know, the Beis Din is going to construe it as having this implied warranty or this implied term? So I think it's really about the scope of the prescription, not about, you know, this, you know, what kind of prescriptive, not about whether it's prescriptive.
Yeah, I got it.
Gabe, you have a hand?
Yeah, just to throw out a different distinction, I'm not sure if this is valid. I wonder if it's a question of authority. Does the authority that Beis Din is using to enact this decision stem from like a halachic authority or from like a societal a regulation? What's motivating the Tanai? Right here, it seems like these are both halachically valid options, and somebody just needs to dictate what the rule is. And so Beis Din is koveya a cloud, but it's not halachic. It's not leveraging. It's not. They're not relying on their halachic authority to do so.
It's interesting. I need to think more about that fundamental distinction between halachic and non-halachic authority. My preference for now is to think of all of these things as halachic authority, and then just there are subsets of halachic authority. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, sure. I mean, Beis Din is obviously a halachic body, but here they're functioning as a regulatory body, which to me feels much, much closer to the world of minhag or the accepted practice
I don't know. I mean, I think this case is not a great example because the Bar Tumah brought down that is actually the drasha from the pasuk that midaraisa the new coin should have to pay for it, and it's just to stamp takana on top of that. Then all right, fine, really the coin should have to pay for it, but we're just making it takana that it comes from tzibor.
So it's like an overriding takana.
Yeah, and actually he says that. No, my bad. Excuse me. It's kind of twisted. It's like from Pasuk Chok Olam implies that the Tzibor has to pay for it midaraisa, and then they made a gezeira that the Yorshim have to pay, but then they saw their Poshea, and then they made a second Tanai Beis Din, which is what this is, that to put it on the daraisa, which is like, first of all, it's just kind of strange why we're like layering these, like what do we achash veirosh, like we can't like retract Gezeira, but so there's just a Tanai Beis Din to apply, make a halacha apply on the Doraisa level. So that's like a very halachic kind of thing.
And so, Zakaria, I'll be moded to you that this isn't the best example. I think the Mishnah Dimai is a better example for the kind of distinction I'm drawing.
Okay, good. Let's get, we did the Mishnah Dimai. Yeah. I say let's get in the full range of examples, and then we'll assess. So what do you think of the case in Zvachim, Dalid Vav, and then the Gemara in Zvachim, I think I have a little later, in the first parak, about Lashem Shisha Dharma Zabach Nizbach. Let's just go to the Gemara. I think the Gemara has a slightly different gloss on it, on Daf Beis and the Beis. The Gemara says, you know, Lashem Shisha Dharma Zabach Nizbach, Rabbi Yossi Ach Mishlohai Beliba Lashem Ach Ach Mkleibu Kasher, Shetanai Bezin Hu, Asnu Bezin Vilolema Lashmo, Dilma Asu Memar Shalol Lashmo. Yeah, I know. All the lit fox over here are probably getting very excited. Oh, Briskarav, you know, Stamal Shaman. Okay, calm down. Right, calm down. Shua, calm down. I know you're getting excited about the Arbiter of Skrull, right? No. Okay. So what's Tanai Bezdin doing in this context?
So it's like a policy recommendation. It's like it's wiser to do things stam than do them the kavana. But like obviously like Bidyavit, if you had the right kavana, they're not gonna like pass all that.
Well, that's for sure true. Let's just stay focused on the main question, me versus Mitnick. Is this a me Gemara or a Mitnick Gemara? Mitnick?
Yeah.
Oh no. This is like a super Takana, no? Like a Takana. Yeah. Straight up Takana, no question.
Yeah, I think it's unconscious. It's got to be a Takana, right? We're just saying, you know, Kohen Gadol better not to have any Kavana at all than to get it wrong. Yeah. Yeah, so I think this would be a very broad sense. Absolutely. There are other examples.
Do you equate this to the concept of Leib Bezdin Masna Aleihem?
Yes, excellent. I didn't put on the Mar Makoma sheet, but some Mefarshim that just conflate the two principles. I think it's one and the same thing.
Right. Right.
What is that principle?
So you have it in cases of like certain shchitas. It's a Leib Bezdin Masna that a Pesach that you're shochet shelo bizmano is automatically a shlamim. Like just Bezdin's koveya that it's a shlamim.
It's like a failed attempt. If you fail your attempt at something, you know, this level, it doesn't just totally fall away, but then there's this concept of Leib Bezdin that fills it in as like a plan B for you. And so yes. Some Mefarshim basically say that they're kind of both options in terms of this dispute between myself and Itamar, right? So some say that it's very Bezdin, and some say, no, you're Masna El Das, or something along those lines.
Yeah. So in the sugi also of Mosros Chat, like the Mosros, the Mos at Sibor that's left over, that's designated for Chataos, could be brought as a Nidvas Ola. There also, the Rishonim used the phrase Leib Bezdin Masna and Tanai Bezdin interchangeably.
Right, because they're designated and you can't redesignate for a different thing. And so I just remember from Tosis Yanto, who says, yeah, Leib Bezdin Masna Aleihem, so therefore there's that undercurrent, that plan B that we allow.
Yeah, exactly. I think those also are clearly, you know, I mean, that seems to have a very broad, you know, it's just like the word Koveya, this business like goes there, that would have a very broad Takana implication. This case in Tful Yom is also an interesting example about, anybody want to tell us about Dalet Zayin in Tful Yom? You know, once upon a time, people were worried about being Midameya, their stuff. Because like, what if your Mafir's Truma and then the bucket of water falls back into the well? Right, the things people have to worry about. So, well, it's not a well. I guess this is your grain silo. So Atorei Mesabor, Biyamar Harezu Chuma Menashe Tala Shalom Shalom Menashever Menashvicha. So you want to do Truma, you want to be Mafir's Truma, but you're not sure you'll get the stuff safely out of the silo. So you're only Mafir Shal Tanai that it gets out safely. So the question is, what's the legal standard for getting out safely? Right? When have you cleared the silo such that the Truma is Chal? So the Mishnah talks about this case of people who make this tnai, right? Amenash etala shalom shalom menashever. Rabbi Yosi Amar af misha hayebodas lahasnos lo hisne nishpara enem damas nivneshu tnai bezdin. Sounds like Chazal just make this takana that, you know, if you acted in good faith or something, right? You wanted to make the tnai, but you didn't get around to doing it. That, well, we're just koveya that it's like a takana that, you know, you did it.
Same tana, right? So it looks like Rabbi Yossi uses this term to just refer to takana bezdin.
Yeah, that's definitely the sense that I'm getting. I think there's one interest. I think the most interesting makar here is the Rashbam in Baba Basra in Kuf Lamed Aleph. Looks like Cole is making dinner. There he is. Cole's making dinner, but Cole, what's on the menu? Oh, you're muted.
It's a black bean soup
with potatoes, sautéed onions. There'll be some curry and garlic in there as well. I become like a quasi-vegan.
You know, Blumenstein, when he talks about like these materialistic fetishes of the American Judaism and like all the things that are wrong with it.
It's meat eating.
He talks about people who read like the food section of the New York Times.
Yeah, the C.S. Lewis talks about that as well in the Screwtape Letters. These days, we don't have a gluttony of quantity; we have a gluttony of taste.
Yeah, that's like paradigmatic of like American hedonism.
I think that's absolutely correct.
I believe the term was "mucha mach mas mios."
The Romans would famously purge themselves so that they could taste everything at the cocktail parties that they what I especially don't understand are like people who spend $200 on a bottle of scotch. It's just like I should, you know, if I'm drinking, I just want to get drunk. Like, why do we need good? All right, anyway, I don't drink, but
good. So I think the most interesting example here is Bava Asker Lamed Aleph in the Rashbam. Cole had a comment about the Rashbam, which is why I mentioned in the first place. So the Gemara here brings up that one of the cases in the Sugya and Ksuvis about this T'nai in the Ksuva that the Banim Zacharim of the wife will inherit her Ksuva, will be Yorish her Ksuva. Now the Gemara ends up questioning this. Well, isn't this a kind of? Oh, here's Donnie. Donnie popped out and he popped back in. So the Gemara questions this. Isn't this a kind of davar shel bal yolam? How could you be makne this entitlement? Not really important for our purposes. The Gemara answers is that well, even if it's a davar shel bal yolam, tanai bezd and shiny, right? So it may be like one of those things that you otherwise couldn't be makne. But, you know, it's a T'nai Bezin, and so you should be able to. This is in the middle of the Shakavitaria. The Rashbam comments on this. What's a T'nai Bezin? He says, De'olim T'nai Bezin, Mishum de Hefker Bezin Hefker, Lahaknos Afilu Ledavar Shlo Bal Yolam. So the Rashbam interprets this as a Koach Bezin that's leaning into Hefker Bezin Hefker. And I think that suggests that we're dealing with some clear takana, right? They're invoking their powers of Hefker Bezin Hefker, which I think leans into my interpretation of T'nai Bezin. It's not just, hey, look, you know, if you look at the thing, there's some implied term here. Bezin is actually leaning into the specific power of Koach Bezin in Dine Mamonis to be Mafkir Mamon. Now, Hefker Bezin Hefker is going to be crucial for what we look at next week. And in whom does this power of Hefker Bezin reside? That's the key issue that we're going to look at in the Rashan B'nei Yer La'asi Al-Kitzasan and in further motivating this idea that there could be normative rules that emerge from the practices of the people.
Can I make the point that I made to you in the... that I texted to you?
Did you text me something just now? Or the Hofeldian point?
About the Rashbam, yeah.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, so I was just going to say, my understanding of Hefker Bezdin Hefker is that the Bezdin can move property around, or at least it can deprive somebody of ownership. So this is actually, what the Gemara is talking about is a little bit broader, because Adam, the principle of Ein Adam Makne Davar Shelo Bal Ha'olam is not about what rights you have over a particular piece of property. It's about what's eligible to be property in the first instance. And so for the We Paskin Ein Adam Makne Davar Shelo Bal Ha'olam. So actually what's being discussed in the Gemara is a broadening of not an extension of like already existent rights to new property or deprivation of rights over property, but a broadening of what the category of property can include in the first instance.
Yeah, good. So Cole, I think that's a very good insight. What we're going to see next week here's another preview.
Which can't just be Hefker, Bez, and Hefker.
Well, what we're going to see next week is that the broad interpretation of Kol Tanai Shebe Mamon Kayem.
Yeah.
Meaning that, well, a lot of DNA Mamonis is just determined by conventions. Right. That view is also expressed via Hefker, Bez, and Hefker. So not as like a narrow power of Hefker, Mamon, but to express the idea that, well, what's right in DNA Mamonis? Really, whatever the people in charge of Mamonis think is right.
That would unify a lot of these disparate Dinim, basically, like, you know, commercial law,
yes,
as a whole, were just like,
yes, you know, there are. I think in the same way that we see the Rishonim shown him here talking in terms of, wait, you know, Kol Tanai Shebe Mamon gives you these powers, they're going to appeal to Hefker, Bez, and Hefker to, you know, to generate a similar conception of,
right,
how Dinim Mamonis works. All this to vindicate Mitnick's article on Marx and the conventionalism of property.
What is this Mitnick's article on Marx?
Hey, Mitnick, where is that article? You want to send it out to us?
What is the article?
Oh, it's the article that kept on giving. I can send it to you, Paul. It's in very bad Hebrew, so you might have trouble parsing it.
I was going to say, I read Haaretz now in Hebrew, so I'm very snobby about the my standard.
Can you put it in the chat, Minik? I actually looked at it. It's not in the Beis Yitzchak Bava Metzia, right?
I don't know.
Put it in the chat, because like, I think you talk about some of these issues there, right?
Really? Cool.
Wait, do you? I think you do, right?
I don't know.
Put it in the chat. We'll all take a look at it. You know.
Sounds good.
Okay. So, good. I just want to give one other formulation of Tanai Bezdin. The Rush in Bava Kamma here in the seventh Perek talks about a few Tanai Bezdins. He says, Rabbi Shmuel ben Osho B'Yochanan Omer, Rabbi Yochanan ben Brugo Omer, Tanai Bezdin hu, Sheyeheze Yored L'toch Sadeh Chavero, V'kotze Tzuko Shel Chavero, Kedei L'Hatzil Nechilo. So, there's just a Tanai Bezdin that gives one person the rights to have a right of access, a right of way into somebody else's property to save his own thing. And similarly, Tanai Bezdin, Sheyeheze Zeh Shofech Yeno, U'matzil Dovshno Shel Chavero, V'notel Demei Yeno Mitok Dovshno Shel Chavero. This almost sounds like a law and economics theory, right? So, you know, it's a Tanai Bezdin that you should save the more valuable asset. And so one person's carrying wine, one person's carrying honey. Apparently the honey is more valuable. So if you see the honey is about to be, your neighbor is about to drop his honey, or it's about to be, it's getting spoiled on the sidewalk, pour out your wine, save his dvash, and you'll be remunerated from the Baal HaDvash. Things like that. So this is just a Tanai Bezdin, right? So Bezdin just requires, here I think actually Mitnick might be right. This might be close to Mitnick's idea as well. It's just like an implied term that, so it's an implied assumption that if I'm incurring a financial loss to help you, you know, equity requires that you reimburse me. So here it's actually not so clear what the Tanai Bezdin is in the Dvash case. If the Tanai Bezdin is that you ought to pour out your wine to save his Dvash, that's part of the Tanai Bezdin, well, then maybe it is more in the Takana sense, right? We're requiring people with less valuable assets to incur the loss to preserve the thing that's overall more valuable. Then that would bring it back into my category, right? It's just a requirement for behavior on the road and triaging the resources. How does it sound?
Linguistically, that might, like, when in the highlight thing you have there, Sheyehei Shofech Yeno, could sound like, oh, that it's telling you what you ought to do. But then I looked back a line and I saw that it's used the same, like that first case of going down and like infringing on your neighbor's property, right, to save your own property. That's clearly not, I would say that it's used the same language of Sheyehei Zeh.
Yeah,
there it's clearly not telling you what you ought to do. It's what you're allowed to do.
There is clearly a Hofeldian permission, not a duty.
Right? Yeah, so it's so like it could be using the same lashon for two different.
Yeah, like, I tell you, I was like looking into this. There's an interesting question, like so you know, there's like a law and economics question, right? So like, is there some, you know, just save the more valuable resource? Or we got to structure the law around like the like maximizing resources and stuff, whatever. So I was interested in this question, halacha, like to what extent does the halacha have these economic interests? I don't know, Rega Lachas, if any of you have thoughts on this. Anybody?
Like, isn't this like a pretty simple case of like Vehitalanta and stuff like that? And like
it doesn't have to be economic. That could just be because you have a duty to assist someone in need. Not that there's some preference for, you know, aggregating social wealth, right? Here, the fact that you're required to drop your wine to save the more valuable honey implies that, you know, there's some value in preserving the more valuable resource, if it's a duty to do so. So I read this article by Rabbi Levine. He has this article in one of his books, Jewish Law and Economics. It's called Economic Efficiency in Jewish Law. Anybody come across this book? No, I have a, where's my copy? I have my copy here, actually. Let's see. Well, I can send out the article. I have a PDF for anybody who's interested. So, no, it's not on my desk. So, he goes to the Sugya in Bava Kamma and Daf Tzadi Aleph. Cool, you'd appreciate this as like a Hofeldian issue. The Gemara there talks about when you're sieging a town, are you allowed to chop down a fruit tree to make siege equipment? And the Gemara says that you have a duty to chop down the non-fruit tree, right, over the fruit tree, because of Baltashvis. That's the Gemara. And most Rishonim say, oh, because you're not allowed to gratuitously waste things. Derech hashchasa. Right? So to chop down the fruit tree gratuitously would be a kind of derech hashchasa, right? Gratuitous waste. So he points to two Rishonim. So the Gemara says there's an exception to the rule. If the non-fruit tree is more valuable to you, then you chop down the fruit tree. So it's an exception to the rule. So he quotes two Rishonim, the Meiri and the Shina Kovetzes, who say that if the fruit tree is less valuable, meaning if the non-fruit bearing tree is more valuable, sheyehei kotzeitz the non-fruit bearing tree. Okay, and he interprets that as a duty. Sheyehei kotzeitz. He says, oh, so you see, there's the halachic duty to maximize the resources, because if the non-fruit bearing tree is more valuable, you have a duty, sheyehei kotzeitz to Ilan Pri. And he has this whole article that's based on that that shita. Then I look at the Makor inside and I'm like, no, I think sheyehei is ambiguous between a duty and a permission, right? Isn't that, as in this case, right? I think Adin's right to say, certainly in the first case, Tanai Bezin sheyehei zeyor letov sada chaver v'kotzeit suko shel chaver kedei lahatzil nechilo. Right? There it sounds like a permission. So actually, I think there are a lot of problems with the Rabbi Levine article. One is that it rests on this assumption of sheyehei being a halachic duty rather than just a license. But you know, we can talk more about that. Okay, good. That's the Tanai Bezdin part of the discussion. What I want to move us into now, before I get to motivate why I think the Ramban's view that treats the minhag hedyotos as formal legislative acts, what I think is going on there, I just want to point to an alternative theory that would explain what's going on in the Ramban. And that really emerges out of the Shach. Shach himself grounds in the Ramban, but let's talk about the Shach for a second. So the Shach in Siman Mem Beis is building off the Shulchan Aruch's psak of the Shitos of the Rishonim. The Rishonim, you know, the Ramban, Tosos, basically conclude, and here's the Shulchan Aruch's formulation, Lashon sheregidim lichtov b'shtaros af bi she'einan mitikon chachamim el lashon shenagu hedyotos lichtov b'makom ahu holchen acharav va'afilu lo nichtav Dunanoso kiilu niftav. Okay? That's the outcome of the sugya, right? So you have a provision, most people write it, you forgot to write it, we're gonna treat it as if it's there. The Shach comments here, in Sukkot Lamed Vav, what does he comment? What's the, Evan, you wanna tell us the gist of the theory? You get to see it yet? Now you can get to see it?
I get to see it.
All right. Zachariah, why don't you tell us about the Shach?
Yeah, so he ties it all back into just kind of projecting what his das was that we have to, and therefore as a natural conclusion of this, he gives an opening as that has to be yadua shiyada, has to be known to us that the person making this agreement knew about the practice to write this. And we're just kind of presuming, okay, he knew about this minhag, and he knows that people write this. So when he didn't write it, he just, misama, he had das that he's going to write it.
That's right. This is like, you know, epistemologists love these questions, you know, like in epistemic logics, right? So of course, to know something, you have to know that you know something, right? So like, to know that you know is different than just knowing, or maybe it's the same thing. So this is the famous Shach of Yadua Sheyada, right? It has to be known that he knows that this is the custom. Because if it's not the kind of thing that we know he knows, then there's no reason to impute to him having accepted the general social custom. So there, the Shach says, "Pirish to me stama haya daito sheyichdokin." It's a huge assumption, right? He says the underlying theory for this principle is that we're just assuming that if everyone does this, then he intended to do it. And it follows from that, he says, "Ulefizeh mashma bepshitas." I think that does follow from his view, right? His substantive view is that, like we saw in some versions of the earlier part of our discussion, in the tshuva of Moshe and the earlier tshuva Sarav, the tshuva of Moshe about rent control, and the tshuva of the Rashba about the inheritance in the couple. This is just an umdin das, right? We're just literally reading into his das that he probably intended to have it here. In which case, the empirical fact, it's contingent on the empirical fact that he knew that this was the custom. It's a really, really striking shach, and it drags our sugya into an umdin das issue, right? Who has thoughts on this?
I was going to say there's a better way of defending the Rambam. Oh, sorry. I spoiled the. Oh no, you had another one. Okay.
Well, yeah, you could just tell us. You want to tell us about the? Just tell us about the Rambam issue.
Yeah. Okay. So the Rambam has this comment that, frankly, I want to ask a historian about. It's not the sort of thing that you can just like, you know, figure out all brisk like.
So the Rambam tes Zion, Zion of Vilchishas. Tell us what's going on there.
So discussing different takanos that are integrated into the ksuva. So everybody agrees that the takanos listed in the Gemara in, I think it's the, is it, which parak of ksuva, so all the takanos listed in the fifth are, like those are part of the ksuva, like the ksuva itself, for instance, is, you know, part, that's part of the wedding, whether you want it to be or not. But there are other ones about that are, were instituted not by, they weren't Amoraic, they were Gaonic, and so perhaps are less, and the Rambam in general just like distinguishes between the, you know, Takanos of the Onim and Takanos of the Gemara. I don't know if that's a systematic,
The Rambam says very famously in his Akdama, he said, all of Bnei Yisrael, this is related to actually what I want to talk about next week. So I don't want to spoil it now, but the Rambam says that what makes the takanos of the Bavli binding is that the Bavli was accepted by all of Klal Yisrael. So he has this consent, this acceptance theory for why everything in the Bavli is binding, which itself is quite intriguing. And as therefore the Gaonim, whose authority, you know, their takanos were after like the, they were the community was already disunified. The roads of communication weren't as open. So like Gans Kla Yisrael never accepted the Takanos Agonim, and therefore they're not automatically binding. So that's interesting, both in as a theory for what makes Takanos binding. It's even more striking as a theory for why everything in the Bavli is binding.
Shua, is this that famous exchange where Aviezer asked Rav Dimitman or something, what's the makar for that Rambam? And there he said, Ha Rambam hu makar la'atzmo.
Oh. Yeah, that I think is correct. I mean, yeah, it's, I don't know the history of it. So I think it's like an interesting question, right? But I mean, to be trivial, but there are two elements there, right? There's the authority that allows for a takana, and then there's the acceptance, which, you know, allows it to endure, right? Like you probably need both of those properties, which I think we're talking around here.
It's interesting. I agree that there's a conceptual distinction to be drawn. I agree that there's a conceptual distinction to be drawn. I'm not sure the Rambam himself draws that distinction. We'll look up the Rambam next week.
Rambam takes for granted that the Amoraim and the Geonim had the authority, is what I'm saying. Right? Like, I don't think the Rambam would say that if I was talking something right now, right, it would be dependent on whether or not everyone accepted it. Even though I am.
I'm not so sure that's true. I want to take this up next week, because next week is where we're going to talk about this relationship between this authority question. That's exactly what we're going to take up next week. That's where my main case lies about, you know, what makes Takanos have their punch, right? So we're going to look at this. We're going to look at this, Rambam.
Honestly, we need to bring Aviezer in as a guest star for this cover.
Are you Aviezer?
I met him at a wedding, I think. But you sent him a Zoom link, you know?
Because I usually have Seder now. I told him I sent him some of our poems, but like Umdinas and Takanos are his, like, I don't know, Yoni, how would you describe it? For some reason, it's like a quasi-obsession of his. And he has a lot of really, really great amount of poems, so.
I hear. So, yeah, the Rambam applies that main theory to this case of Ksuva, right? He says, well, you know, the Gonim had this nice idea to Mitakein, to Gova Ksuva from Metaltalin. Let's all clap for the Gonim. But we're not bound by it, right? So if you low cost of kaf b'shtar k'sivah l'nasa stam, im ha'yodeya b'takana zu shel ha'gonim goga, v'im lav oshin estapik lano ha'davar, misyashim b'davar zaharbe, she'ein koach b'takanas ha'gonim ladin ba, af al p'shelo nisparsha, k'din t'nai k'sivah, she'ein takanas ha'sanhedrin ha'gedola. You think, if the Sanhedrin ha'gedola tells me to do something, great. If the Gonim tell me to do something, ein koach b'takanas ha'gonim ladin ba, unless people contract in, right? It's an interesting, kind of interesting statement. Now, the reason why the Achronim get all worked up about this Rambam is because they think it's inconsistent with the rule of Darshina Lashon Hegyo. They say, well, if this is a takana, then even if you don't write it in, it should be as if it's automatically there. That's what gets the Beis Yosef all worked up. And the Beis Yosef's answer is, well, here's his question. The Beis Yosef in Simon Membez cites the Rambam, and he says, this seems to be almost in contrast with the rule of Darshin on Lashon Hedyo, Midvar Vela Nir Shecholek al Dinzeh, right? Because this Dinzeh would say, the Afa Pishalo Nechtav Kamisha Nechtav Dami. And he goes in an interesting direction. He says, "V'yesh omrim de lashon shenagu bo hediotos me'atzman ubli takana, kivan shemeatzman nagu kein havaleket tanai k'siva, afal pishalo nichtivu, k'misha nichtivu dami. Aval kshenagu kacha pitakanas achronim, lo chashiv kol kach pashit t'neim adap pishalo nichtav k'nichtav dami." This is like the theory we saw in the Chassam Sofer, right? It's like, ones takat, that's what you're going to say, Nick? Yeah, an interesting parallel to that. So I'm still like ones machmas takanos chachamim, and Sivis had an idea about this. So, you know, I don't know if it's an interesting attempt to defend the Rambam. Ultimately, the Beis Yosef backs out of it because he cites a Chuvas Rashba who says Right? Well, you know, if anything, an enactment from the kahal should be stronger than a minag hedyotos. So this is an attempt to wrestle with these distinctions between organic practices of the people that come about versus top-down legislation. Not much hangs on that for now. We'll talk more about that next week. What's interesting for us is the Shach wants to solve the same problem, and he says, oh, the difference, the Rambam is basically telling us in Hilchos Ishos, the general rule that we only say kol mashalo nichtav is kamisha nichtav dami when it's yadua sheyada. Right? That's what determines. So he's saying actually the Rambam in Hilchos Ishos is more precise because that's where the Rambam basically articulates the rule that it's only imhayu yodeya betakana zushala goanim gova. Right? If you knew that this was the default position of the goanim, then yes, you're bound by it. So to summarize, the Shach thinks that that's the way to reconcile the Rambam with everybody else, which is to say that everybody else agrees that you have to know that this is the minhag or the takana in order for us to do darshina lashon hedyot. Okay, Adin and then Yoni.
So does the Shach then have to read the second half of Halachat Tet there as like lav davka? Because at the end of the day, like, if he's like reducing the Rambam down to just like the Rambam is just like restating the principle of it's of yadua shiyada, and then but then the idea of like, oh, because the Gaonim don't have koach as opposed to Sanhedrin Gedolah, it seems to be not super relevant to the like the actual operating principle here of yadua shiyada.
Yeah, that's a really interesting diuk. It could be the case. I don't want to get too deep into the koach Gaonim takanas Gaonim question. It's a little aside. It's a bit of a side topic. For this question. But yeah, it's a really interesting idea. I agree. Maybe we'll revisit it next week when we look at that, the Rambam's theory inside and how it relates to the Kalach Dakana question.
You know? It's maybe kind of off, not so related to the Shach, but in Halacha Ches, where the Rambam notes that everyone already has the minhag to like personally write in Metatlin, why isn't that enough to trigger Darshin Al Shanhadiyot?
Yeah. You're saying this itself should be enough? Is that the idea?
I don't know. Do we not find where people are applying Darshin Lashon Hedyot to other cases other than those five? As in, like, saying that those are exceptional? I mean, Shulchan Aruch seemed to say it was a general klal, that if there's a broad minhag or a broad communal tanai people make, that's in there.
Yeah. Well, you're saying that the fact that it became the practice itself should be sufficient.
Right. He also says after this, it's not if he's Yodea Minhag, he's Yodea the Takana. As in, does it matter that he knows that it was the Takana, or does he know that the content of the idea that this is something people do?
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it's really interesting. I'm not sure if, you know, if the Shach's right. Shach has a tendency to bulldoze, kind of read other Rishonim into his framework. So we can just treat the Shach for now as his own idea. Mm-hmm. What's important for what I'm trying to build up is the Shach's trying to drag this sugya of Darshin and Lashon Hedyot again into this umdina, you know, minastam, this is what he was thinking, and therefore he requires the legal standard of Yadu Ashayada in order for us to be Doris Lashon Hedyot. Yoni?
Yeah. Do you think that the language in the Rashba in Chel Gimel, Simin Yod Zayin, can kind of bridge even the Rambam and the Rashba, or at least give us a less radical way to understand this?
Plus, you want to take a look at that language right now?
It's just, of all the Rashbas, I thought this one, it's so common, like there's like a series of Rashbas and like six of them, I mean, Makom Echad, and then one of them he just like explodes with, gives you a little more insight. So this one, I think, is that.
Yeah.
This is the Rashba de Shmaitza.
Exactly, that's right. So let me just say a little bit about the Rashbas. You know, this came up earlier. I think Zachariah raised the point about, you know, Situmta being this tucked away sugya and like the end of Ezu Nesha, right? And then this whole jurisprudence develops around it, right? It's like Tanochot, as I mentioned, there's like the David Lichtenstein headlines podcast with that Toein, right? And the Toein said, nowadays all you have to know is Situmta, Minigas Sochrim, right? You don't have to dig deep in Hilchos Shtaros and Hilchos Inquali Migo. You know, so Harya was saying, well, isn't it strange they have this one little Gemara in Ezer Neshef that now is so prominent. There's a similar phenomenon here when you look at this Chuvas Arashba. There are a few more I want to add to this list, but you don't have to look at all of them. Where just case after case after case, like he just decides them based off Darshino and Lashon Hegio, right? He just says, well, the minhag is to do this and Darshino and Lashon Hegio, so that's the outcome. So I wanted to give you a flavor for how this is just a central theme in how the Rashba is deciding cases. So it's a tucked away principle. It's actually, we saw Machlokes Rishonim about how to interpret what Darshino and Lashon Hegio mean. The Rashba takes the Ramban's interpretation, right? That it's about minhag, and then he applies it across all these cases. Cole's shaking his head vigorously.
Rusty Reno just texted me something that I disagree with.
Oh, okay. I thought you thought that was wrong with the Rashba. So
I don't know. I noticed it's an interesting thing that Christians often talk about. I'll tell you this later.
Okay. So Minik, what did you want to, Yoni, what did you want to take out of Gimel Yud Zayin here? And then work backwards.
Sure. So there were two parts. First of all, the language of, why can't I find it on your page, on here? Kol ha masna al das masha nohagin lichtov masna, or something like that.
Do you have the actual?
I could find it. I just have it in here. Hold on.
Call Makabel Stama al Mash and Noag and Lazos Makabel?
Yeah. Call a Kosev Sham al Das Mash Horbu Lichto Ashtarbu Kosev. That's what I have.
Call a Kosev.
There we go.
There we go. Af Kol Shtar Shalo Kosev Kain Mamish al Sasam. I didn't say anything. Shakola or Stam. Shakola Kosev Sham. Al das masha hurgu lichtov ashtar hu kosev.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah. So first, my point there is that it gets out of the adua shia at that point, because it basically says you don't have to know, but you're kind of tying your own transaction to, you know, transaction norms and trade usage and stuff like that. I like that idea because I thought that's the understanding of the Ramban of kol makadesh al. I can't remember the phrase anymore. Das Bezdin Humakadesh, or whatever it is, that it's the same thing, that you don't have to have in mind the specifics, but you know, look, I don't know everything, and so I'm just going to bank on other people and transactional norms. The second thing is...
Yeah, I think that's right. I think you're right. It's doing away with the Yadu Esha Yada standard, and it's just like a general presumption. We do business like in conformity with the rules.
Right. Right. And it gets away from the epistemological questions. And then the next line, I think, is the other point, which is that he makes the point that in some places there was just an express takana to spread the minhag from the areas that it was knowing to all areas. And in some places it was not. And yet the minhag, it has the same where, right? And so that means that where there's a minhag and it wasn't nitkan, it has one rule. And then if there was a minhag in most places, the chachamim stepped in and we're masaking for all the places. And that really separates these two ideas, is that it could be, in the places that it was knowing, you don't need a chacham to ratify it. But in the places that it wasn't knowing, that's when the takana chacham come in and spread it to those places.
Yeah, so it's like you're saying the nihug by itself, the nihug hegiotos, is sufficient within its own jurisdiction. In order to extend it beyond that, that's when you need like the takana to extend it beyond those borders.
Right. And I'm wondering if that could help with the Rambam, if the Rambam perhaps doesn't understand the Gemara of Lashon Hegio like these Rishonim do, doesn't mean that he rejects minhag whole, you know, all of it, but it could be that he doesn't accept this idea that the Chachamim ratified the minhag and spread minhagim from place to place.
Interesting. Yeah, it's an interesting suggestion. We should think about that suggestion. To interpret the Rambam and Hilchos Ishas, right?
Yeah, and the point is not whether he knew or didn't know, but if it's that if the minhag of the place, these are, that the takanos of Gaonim are not the types of takanos that spread, and so therefore if it's not nitkan or nahug in a certain place, right, there's no authority for it, like you said, that's what the Rambam holds, and there's no minhag for it because it's only in a specific place. And these are, and the Rambam does not hold that there's that, or even if the Rambam holds that you could do this, this is just not one of the examples that they did, spread a common minhag across, you know, uniformly.
Yeah, I think there's, I think we should pursue that. I need to think more. I haven't looked so much into Ram Shita himself. I was just more interested in the Shach's development of the idea of Yidua Shiyada. But I'll look more into that. So that's a nice suggestion. So I agree with Mitnick's interpretation of, you know, the what the Rashba was doing here. It's just, you know, the rule is we read people as doing business in conformity with the practice of the area that they're doing business in. And so that's why the minhag hadyotos is going to, the minhag hadyotos is going to be binding on this person who didn't put this provision in his contract, because we just have this general rule that, you know, the general rule that kol shtar shelo kasvuchin mamish al astam, kol hakosev al das mashehorgu lichtav hashtar hukosev. And that's a refrain that repeatedly appears in the Rashba's writing. Kol mikabel stam al masha noagin lasos mikabel. And you see this in several Tshuvas of Rashba. I want to take 5 minutes to just give you to review the scope of cases that the Rashba applies this principle to. And then I want to talk about the last Tshuvas of Rashba, which I think is really important. Did everybody get a chance to see the last Tshuva that I mentioned in the text? Oh, if not, we'll go through it together. So in Siman Tafresh Samech Beis, you get a classic case of just, you know, husband and wife, they got married. It seems like everybody who got married would have like a ksuva that would say that they're osin tanayin kasher yunhagu ish v'ishto. That everyone would write that the tanayim are kifi minhaga makom. But this ksuva failed to have that clause that says that the, you know, tanayim are kifi minhaga makom. So the Rashba says, no biggie. Kol hakosev v'anosev v'mekabel sadeh v'shar dvarim. Chayotzeve l'adas minhag hamakom hu kosev. V'zehu darshu chachamim lashon hedyo. Kilomar inyanim v'hanhago shenagu hedyotos me'atzman. There's got to be a girsa issue here. It can't be shenagu me'atzman shetiknulam chachamim. Unless that means what Mitnick was saying, they were nohig me'atzman, and then there was a takana to ratify it later, like the, to approve it, like the equivalent of like an adam chashiv approval, something like that. V'af she'im lo tiknum b'haskama. And he says, those are all the cases in Darshina Lashon Hedyo. And here's the crucial line. V'heim kitakanos hakvuo she'tiknu chachamim. I read the Rashba here as saying, I think the Girsa is a little messed up. I think in this line he's saying these are nihugim shenogu adyotos me'atzman. It's got to be shelo tiknu lahem chachamim. But I'm not. So, but just take my read for a second. His point is like the Ramban that these practices shenogu adyotos me'atzman have the authority and the normative power of takanos hakvuo shetiknu chachamim. And that's just an explication of the Ramban's position, but a nice formulation of it. Good. Here again, in Chelek Aleph Siman Elef Ches, it's just a repeated of a shorter version of that same tshuva. He says, Ma shehurgulu ha-hedyotos lichtov me'atzman b'lo takana. Afidu lo kasav kamisha kasav dami k'namina b'tanai bezdin. That's the language of the Shoel. And the Rashba says, yeah, you know, Kain MS Valav Nismachti Bidavar Baruhu. You know, he ratifies that formulation of his position. So I think again you get this idea that Minik, you have a different reading of it? Well. No? Okay. So but do you all agree with my reading that like it's very strong in the camp of the Ramban? That Masha Horgu Adyotos Me'atzman has the power of a Koach Takanas Chachamim. Good. So I really want to explicate that idea, why that is the case. Now, just give you another example of the Rashba leaning on this principle. So Chelek Beis Siman Kuf Lamed Zayin. This is a cool case. Misha Hotzi Shtar Chob Al Chaveiro, and it was a Shtar Shekasev Bo Ne'emanos, and the Lova has all sorts of defenses. So anybody know what a Shtar Sheyesh Bo Ne'emanos is? I think it's the equivalent of like a confession of judgment. Maybe the lawyers. Shua, you want to tell us what a confession of judgment is?
I have absolutely no idea.
Never heard of it.
Never heard of a confession of judgment?
No.
Oh, you guys got to see the real
world. I like Hodas Balbin, because I could tell you about Hodas Balbin.
So a confession of judgment is like you basically you plead or you sign and you notarize like this admission that you owe a certain amount of money. But when you sign it as a confession of judgment, you're waiving all defenses. So it's like there can't be any hearing about the validity of the admission. Google confession of judgment. We have these in the Bezin all the time when people are like, I want money put in escrow and a confession of judgment, and then we'll move on. So the idea of a confession, there are also these things, you have to like, they say that some of these like loan shark companies require you to sign a confession of judgment that you'll pay back, $100,000. And people don't realize that when you sign a confession of judgment, you're waiving all rights to protest the legitimacy of the claim. So that's like a shtar shekasev bo ne'emanos. Basically, you say, I owe you $100 and I waive all rights to dispute the validity of the claim. You don't have to bring Adim, all these things. So you can see here, the Rashba says, so apparently there are a few things that happened in this case, but the Rashba says, even if you left out that clause that says there's ne'emanos, kol ha'malve al das minig ha'makom ha'malve, b'yaf ha'pisha zeh lo kasav, v'lo hisneh, ha'reze ki'ilu hisneh b'shas alva. Okay, so even if you forgot to put in the ne'emanos clause, if that's the minag, or it's going to be there, why? D'darshinan l'shonos shederech hedyotos lichtov, ki'ilu hein t'nan gemurin shal bezdin. She'im lo kasav k'mo she'kasav. Misha Kasav Dami. It's pretty interesting. So the Rashba seems to rely on this principle to say, well, yeah, if you left out this Ne'emanos thing, and every shtar has Ne'emanos, usually we're gonna say that this is a Tanai Bezdin. And again, he uses that phrase of the Ramban, Kilu Hin Tanayin Gemurin Shel Bezdin.
Jamar?
Yeah.
I have a problem.
Yeah.
The Gemara that we looked at the top of this document.
One second, Cole, give me one second. I want to just get in the range of the Rashbas, and then unless your issue is about the Rashba itself.
No, it's more fundamental.
Okay, so let me just finish the Rashbas, and then we'll get to the fundamental issues right at the end. But I'm almost done with the Rashbas. It's only three more minutes. So the Rashba in Beis Reish Samaches, this is the long tubus of Rashba we saw. Just want to emphasize his formulation about Darshino Lashon Hedyo. He says, in terms of practices of B'nai HaMedina, filu lo hiskimu b'feirish B'nai HaMedina, ela shenogu kein stama, hu minag chazak ilu hisnubo b'feirish. Okay. He cites minag mevato halacha, v'danin bo kederech shedanin b'tnai bezdin. So here he just says, minag generally has the force of tnai bezdin. Here I think I'm just responding to Cole's point in the WhatsApp. Is it a practice to write clauses specifically, or is it about any practice that's an accepted convention that gains the level of a takanas bezdin, a kitanai bezdin? I think this formulation here in Beis Reish Samed Ches is very broad, right? It's chol makom b'mashen nagu b'mamanis, afilu lo nagu kin blah blah blah, afilu lo hiskimu b'feirish, ela shenagu kin stama, hu minhag chazak ilu hisnu. Kiderech shedanin b'tnai bezdin, v'danin bo kiluhu t'nai bezdin, kiven shenahagu lasos kein tadir. So I think this Chuvus HaRashba is just explicit that this is true of all minhagim shenahagu akal me'atzman, that it has the status that Tanai buzzed in. In the end of his discussion here, he says, he appeals again to this idea. He also is very strong on these analogies. In Bayes Shinya Dalid, I'm not going to go into the case there, but this is like an interesting halacha lemaisa issue. He talks about a town where everybody who would lend money, which say almanashalo to shamit shvius, right? Everybody would put in a clause to say that, like, you know, the loan is still good even through Shemitah. And assuming that's a good tanai, the Rashba says, if this guy forgot to put it in, well, we say, oh yeah, it's darshina lashon hedyot. He meant to have it there. So, you know, like, you forgot to write a prosbul or something, you know, well, everyone writes a prosbul, so darshina lashon hedyot, mistama, you would have wanted a prosbul. Well, I don't know if you'd go that far. But certainly with respect to a provision of a menash shalo tishamit shvius, you know, the Rashba says, darshina lashon hedyot, afil lo nichtav kamisha nichtav dami. That's what he writes here in Bayes Shinya Dalid. What I want to draw your attention to these other tshuvas are just more cases. You see, he applies the same principle. We don't have to go through them. But I want to draw your attention to Chelek Dalid Simin Kuf Chaf Hei. So just everyone take a look at that tshuva for a second. We didn't have a chance to look at it carefully. It's right here on my screen. Chelek Dalid Simin Kuf Chaf Hei. So who wants to tell us what's going on here?
The referral program. Reuven brought some customers into Shimon's store. They made some purchases. Then Reuven then claimed some schar from Shimon, because that was the minhag of the area, that if people refer customers, that you pay the refer. And Shimon says, well, we didn't make any tanai. You just walked in here. Why should I have to pay you anything?
Yeah, this is like our perfect dispute, right? This is like the exact case you want to test this principle. So, store owner, I bring in customers, I demand a referral fee or referral commission from the owner, and I say, right, the important point here is the argument is that shekein minag bale chanuyos litein schar mivia hakonam lechanusam. That's customary practice around here. Everyone pays a commission for referrals. And of course, the store owner's defense, Shein ochaya beklum, lefisha lo hisna lo klum. V'yafal pisha nogu bale chanuyos. It's like freedom of contract, right? Like, I can't be held liable unless I contract it in. Like, who cares about what people do? Right? I'm not one of the people who do those things. So, what do you think the Rashba says? And notice this, in the end, he talks about yorid. He says there's also a yorid consideration here, which is interesting. But what's his first answer? Tshuva, hadinam ruven hatoveya, right? The referrer gets his commission. Shekein nagu bale achanuyos dekach, chol shemevi konim lechanut staman kipirushan, shal das kein misasik zebim melachas bale achanut. So, darshin alashon hedyo. Right? V'chol dvarim ashen nagu ben arabim stam, harei yu kitznai mefurish. And he cites our Gemara, Kuf Dalet, etc., etc. Then in addition, he says maybe there's also a Yorid ground, right? If you're Mashbiach, somebody else, you're entitled. And that's interesting because this is not Mashbiach in like this literal sense. You're not Notea, Eitzim. So it's interesting that he thinks the Yorid applies here. But what do you think of his application of Darshinam Lashon Hedyo to this example? Why is that significant?
He's using this to make the agreement as opposed to qualifying the agreement. It's like the Tanai basin we saw about the Ksuba. If you don't want a Ksuba, there is a Ksuba. Same thing right here. There's a minhag that referrers get paid. Then he hired him, essentially.
Yeah. Flush that out for me a little bit in teasing out the significance. What's missing here? I think you said it, just so I wanted me to be a little more precise.
It's any agreement. It's just they...
Yeah.
Right.
There's no there's no contractual relationship. Right? It's not like a case where, and we're just trying to figure out the terms. Right? And then we could say, hey, what are the implied terms? The implied terms are whatever people usually put in. In a case, right? This is a case where I, just on my own volition, brought two people to your store and I'm demanding a referral fee. And the Rashba says, on the basis of Minog, I'm entitled to it. I think this case is analogous to a torts case for our conceptual person. It's not that it's a case of damages. You crash into somebody on the highway. There's no antecedent agreement between the parties about what's going to happen when you get into a car.
It's just Yoreid. Isn't this just an extension of Yoreid?
No, Yoreid's the second answer. Right? Yoreid's a different principle.
Why is it a different principle?
He's appealing to Darshin and Lashon Hedyo.
I understand that, but why does he need that? Why wouldn't Yoreid get him?
That's a psychological question. For us,
not a psychological question. It's
you could say maybe this isn't as direct of a. This isn't like I go into your backyard and actively make improvements to it. You could say that maybe that like I'm it's like some sort of secondhand assistance that really the people who are being mashbiachi are the people buying your stuff. And I just was like, it's not as direct. It could be that it's not as direct of a benefit providing behavior.
It seems like even less of a fetish. You consented to buy the stuff. You didn't consent to you consented to sell the people the goods. You didn't consent than to have the trees planted in your.
But that's focusing on the person who on that's like focusing on the other side of the
person
equation
that you're asking to cough up cash for.
Well, by the way, I think you're wrong just in the reading. You seem to be trying to get a contract in and
no contract.
Right. Well, I just want to forefend about what the implication. You seem to be saying that there's an contract or something between.
No. I'm not
the buyer and the seller.
No.
Okay. Oh. Yeah.
No. All I was saying was this.
Okay. I just want to say the Rashba I think rules that out when he says the underlying principles. Kol she mevi konam b'chanut staman kipirushin shal das kain misasik zev b'maleches b'alachanut. Right. It's like a direct entitlement that the referrer has for his thing, not an implied term of the sale between the buyer and the seller.
That's fine, but I agree with that. All I was saying was that the reason why this is even less of a chiddush than Yoreid is that, and therefore logically implied by it, is that you are in the store in this case the you are consenting to the benefit being conferred, namely you're consenting to sell the goods. Hold off.
We're talking about what's the basis for compensating the benefit provider here. So
not merely that they walked in the store.
I think it's the fact that that's what's done. Right?
No. They wouldn't. No. There wouldn't be a case if you're telling me that the Rashba would, I bring in people to your store, 10 people, rich, you know, Arab oil billionaires, and they buy nothing. And then I go to you and I say, Itamar, cough up. You know, they laugh you out of Philadelphia.
I think the minhag requires the sale to be completed, right?
Right. What I'm saying is, though, that the reason why that minhag has teeth to elicit compensation from you is that, or one reason, let me put it this way, one reason why that minhag eliciting compensation from you is less of a chiddush than Yoreid is that you consent, you're a party, not to any contract with me, but you're a party to the conferral of the benefit. Namely, you sold the goods.
It's like,
anybody else with me?
Just to flesh Cole's point out a little bit, and I think we have to work on the language, but yeah, like, If we were using legal terms, like the things we would call this is like quasi-contract. And it's like, I think Minnick's making a fake, but it's like a theory of unjust enrichment. It's like if there is a benefit conferred.
Yeah. That's Yoreid though. That's the second principle that he appeals to, not the first.
Well, I'm saying,
true. The difference between this and Yoreid is that Yoreid is pure, like, And look, I think it's important to develop exactly what URID is, but generally URID is just like a pure economic question. It's like, we think equity says that if you gain money in like the society that we've set up, we need to like compensate.
Yeah, okay, fine.
But here what it is that it's unfair for you to benefit from a common practice without then also paying up due to the same common practice, right?
I don't think so. I think the unjust enrichment argument is just, that's the URID side of it.
No, because URID is not unjust. URID is a totally different kind of, unjust enrichment means I have gained a benefit.
Right, your expense.
Right, and that expense.
The expense here is the labor effort.
No. Yeah, but the point is you didn't take anything. You were given something. URID is you're claiming compensation for labor expended, not for a loss that you unjustly incurred.
I don't want to quibble on like what unjust enrichment is in halacha and secular law. I don't think that's not what I want to focus on now. We're going to talk about URID. That's on our agenda. I'm trying to figure out that in the first answer, I think the first answer basically refutes kind of the normative basis that I wrote in the article, that Minigas Sochrim works exclusively through Tanai, Kol Tanai Shel B'Mamon Kayim, and that Kol Tanai Shel B'Mamon Kayim has to be housed in the contract. So, right, in the what I was thinking, and this Rashba I think is really just not just puts pressure. I think the Rashba defeats it. What I thought was that, you know, Kol Tanai Shel B'Mamon means we could explicitly make a Tanai, in a contract. And when we have an agreement, there are certain implicit tnayim also that exist there. And, you know, when I sell you a house, like the implied term in that contract is we'll follow New Jersey law on, you know, whether the chandelier is part of the house. So Kol Tanai Shel B'Mamon Kayim only makes sense when there's some contractual relationship between the parties that they're agreeing to. But when this Rashba applies Darshinam Lashon Hedyot, sense of, you know, Minhage Hedyotos being Ikar and having the force of Tanai Bezdin, I think that shows that we're not limited to contracts anymore, which I pointed out in analyzing the Ramban is one of the implications of the Ramban's theory. Right? The implication of the theory is that Minhag on its own has the status of a Takana, and in the same way that Takana is not limited to contracts, you could have a Takana about liability rules on the road. As I mentioned, you could have a takana about not holding doctors liable for malpractice. So you could have a takana, you know, for any monetary interaction, for any form of civil organization in Dine Mamonis. And I think that's what we're seeing here in the Rashba when he extends the principle in Dalet Kuf Kaf Hei to this case of the Konim. No?
I mean, I think it's significant that the kind of the party to be charged here is not the layman who brings the person and asks for the commission, but is instead the merchant. Because the Rashba, we've seen before how the Rashba allows for mercantile custom, but I don't think that we have any example of the Rashba where like everybody is bound by like this broad, big custom. I just think that this fits more into that narrow category where there's an allowance for mercantile custom and each group of merchants or guild or whatever is considered like its own city with respect to Minhag. And here, it's not the person who's receiving the commission who is to be charged, because I think that would have a lot more trouble saying that this person doesn't know anything, is not even part of this group, just because of one action is going to be subject to this minhag. Instead, it focuses on the merchant. This is the common practice of merchants. You always give a finder's fee or whatever or a commission to people who come in, and therefore you can't claim that you don't owe it.
But I would push back, Yoni, because grant everything you say, the way that we've shown him conceptualize like these industry specific units, these guilds or whatever, they just conceptualize that as a little ear. Right? They say every guild is its own ear. So like a B'nai Ominus, you know, the doctor's organization is ear of doctors, and you know, the tanners are an ear of tanners.
Right. It allows for, I'm super American, but like that allows for like at least a modicum of consent. you know, you could hear someone saying, "Kol ha'yoshev be'ir al das mashenogin be'ir, kol ha'osek ba'umnes al das mashenogu ba'umnes." But to say "kol ha'yoshev ba'olam k'das mashenogin ba'olam" is really, really broad, and I don't think that's
fine. But Yoni, I would say, even if you're right, you're still pushing us into like this broader kind of social contract or this kind of like broader industry contract idea, rather than like specific, like this is a term in this agreement. I think you only, once you appreciate that Minhag works just as Tanai Bezdin, you don't even need the consent thing anymore. You don't even need the shach, oh, it's because we're thinking in those terms. It just has the force of a takana.
I mean, I would hear that if not for the language of the Rashba that we focused on in 3:17, where the Rashba seems to push against that, which is why I agree with Shua's reading that Tanai Bezdin is the output. And it's, if anything, it's similar to some Tanai Bezdin that some Rishonim in some of those cases refer to Tanai Bezdin or Lev Bezdin Masna Alehan as a kind of punting on the issue to the powers that be.
This is interesting. So I didn't have a hand, but I just want to frame what we're going to do on Tuesday and Thursday. So the plan is, let's think more about this last Chuvas HaRashba here. You know, take Shabbos to look at it carefully. My reading is that this Chuvas HaRashba thinks that we could cut anchor from contracts. We could cut anchor from the Shach idea of Minastam. This is what he was thinking. And it's more just like the normative practices themselves could constitute things that are like takanos. I'll explain more why I think that's the case. Some of you will say, well, that just sounds like you're imposing like a Lockean idea on like the way the halacha sets things up. But we're gonna talk about that next week. So what I wanna look at is this idea of Rashayin b'nei ha'ir lahasiya al kitsasan. And when we see there's a lot of Chuvas HaRashbas there, where he has like a whole theory about whether you could have Rashayin b'nei ha'ir without any Bezdin enacting the takanos on behalf of the b'nei ha'ir. So I wanna use that as a way of connecting the koach takana of Bezdin and Dine Mamanis with the just nihuge ha'hedyotos having normative force. And that's also going to shed light on what I'm trying to suggest now, that you don't even need an implied das. You don't even need al das kein osim to get the koach ha'takana off the ground. And this is where I'm totally going to cut anchor from what I wrote in that article, that it's an implied term because everyone minastam is agreeing to it. That's what's on the agenda for Tuesday and Thursday. I'm going to send out a separate makoro sheet with sources for Rashayin b'nei ha'ir lahasiya al kitsasan. But it's really just it's the makom v'patish of what we've been working towards. Or maybe it's the, you know, malaches soser, because it's in tension with at least how I initially framed things. But at least so far in this man, I think it's consistent with the tension that we've seen. Adin, you want to get the last word in before we...
Yeah, I think this might be similar to what Yoni was saying, and to potentially defend the approach that you think this Rashba like undoes, that it's, I agree, it's like somewhat of a stretch logically or intellectually, but to say that if you are operating a store, especially in this area where there is this minhag of paying finder's fees, that there is an implied agreement that you have with any potential finder, that like part of the assumptions that you have as operating a store in a place where people pay finder's fees, that okay, that I am kind of, even if I don't know, I can't name which Reuven or which Shimon is going to bring people into my house, but that there is this, as soon as someone walks into my store, I have this implied agreement with them that if they are here as a finder, that I owe them, that there's a contractual relationship between us, and that can be dictated.
Let's grant that. Would you then say that same for the rules of the road? So you get into a car accident with somebody, hey, we all have this implied agreement that if we get into an accident, we're going to follow like the New York rules of torts, not the halachic ones. But shouldn't that be just the same implied agreement?
So yeah, so I guess you could say that maybe like operate like what Yoni was saying about like mercantile custom, that there's a more discrete set of rules and assumptions of like, this is a business I'm operating with business practices. if you want to take it, like anyone who gets in a car is we're agreeing to the general car minhag.
The rules for car riders.
Yeah, which I agree. That's why I agree. I'm not in love with this, but I think that's a possible reading within this Rashba. That like
I appreciate Mitnick's point that, you know, the guild thing is supposed to solve the problem of, right, so solve this problem. Because my concern is that once you go for that loose implied contract idea, then the distinction between contracts towards unjust enrichment is a little meaningless because everything's just an implied understanding, right, between everybody. Law and economics people like that because they say, you know, everything is just what we would have done, just transaction costs are too high to actually do it. So, you know, let's just think like what are people wanting to agree to or something like that, had they been able to agree. And that, but you know, one of the features of that is that it destroys all these distinctions between contracts, torts, property, right? They're all just economic means of, you know, figuring out people's preferences. So we could go in that direction, but if we think there's like an important distinction between, you know, these different areas, then we'd have to either say something like Yoni's saying or fall back on the way I'm analyzing it and saying that Minhag HaSochrim is much broader than just Kol Tanai Shebe Mamon Ki'ilu Hisne Beferush in a private agreement. All right, Shkayach everyone. This was helpful at the end. So let's just take a few minutes next week on the Chubas Rashba, read it over again. MS Yore Darko, you'll see that my reading is the better reading. Or maybe you'll be blinded by some other things and you'll think Mitnick's reading is better.
My reading.
And we'll see Cole's reading also. And we'll start on Rosh Hashanah B'nei Yir L'Asiyah Al-Kitzasan. I think we'll do two chaburas on that. And that means that after next week, we'll be back in Achila Mishabal Bayis. Shkayach.
I wonder if we could...